And Samer and Lainey and Esty Dinor will be talking again next week. Bye bye. We come and listen and support it.
Michael, my dear. You're listening to WORT Madison. Wow! I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. So good. So good. I got a year. Wow! I feel nice. A sugar and spice. I feel nice, a sugar and spice. So nice, so nice, I got you.
Well, good afternoon. Welcome to the Mel and Floyd Summer Replacement Show. I'm Mel. Floyd is on assignment, but with us as always, the man who knows everything, Mr. Smarty Pants.
You bet.
And a special guest, Ruby's back.
There's no place I'd rather be to celebrate America's 250th birthday.
It's the 250th year that Donald Trump has been president.
Feels
that's
like
what
it.
My notes say here. Wait a minute. It's been a year and a half. But we
talked to Dr. Einstein about that. It's all relative.
We will be monitoring some of the festivities from the Washington, D.C.
The collapsing stages.
We've got it up on the monitor here in the studio.
The bubbling pools.
Right now, they've got the possum jugglers out.
That's not easy to do.
Later in the day, the president will come out and guess the weight of every man, woman, and child in the country. Oh, look at that fat one there.
I heard he was also talking to a holographic Theodore Roosevelt. That was a highlight of the season as well.
Opinions are split as to whether he thought it was really Teddy Roosevelt or not. So, Ruby, how you been? And we haven't had you on here for ages. We missed you.
Yeah, for about 250 years.
Something like that. I've been good. I've been busy doing my work, which rudely wants me to be there at, 1 p.m. on Fridays.
Your employer?
My employer. They won't let me off for
do this for free?
Yeah, right, do this for, I don't know, my own vanity. But I've been really good. My dog Blue is getting older, which has been its whole journey, with mobility devices for her. And my garden is popping off, which is the best part of summer.
It's insulting you, or what?
Yeah.
what kind of garden do you have? What have you got?
Little vegetable garden. Yeah. So I've got cucumbers that are starting.
Little vegetables.
Veggie tails.
It's veggie tails. Yeah, I got some tomatoes. I topped one of my tomato plants, and it that one totally died, and I learned a big lesson. But otherwise, everything's looking up for me in my garden.
Mm-hmm. So you work for an entity now that tries to make money out of stuff like this, right?
Yeah.
We're baffled by that concept.
People talk into microphones and it generates income.
Yeah, we don't know what that means.
Trying to make a career out of podcasting is a beast of its own.
I'm sure. Yeah. So. I know it's not really related, but I was reading an article yesterday about how corrupted OnlyFans has gotten now. But I mean, all these agencies will sign up people and take 50% of their earnings, and then just crack the whip on them to crank out content and control who they see and how much they eat, and it's really
that's the pornographic thing, right?
Yeah. I mean, it can be.
I saw an interview with
too pure to ever.
Well, I saw an interview with a guy that cracked me up. That was on. He's what do they call him? Actors? I don't even know what they call him.
Content creator.
Yeah, he was a. This cracked me up. He was talking about content, and he kept going on and on about content. And I didn't under. It came up on YouTube, and I didn't understand what it was at first. And this guy was interviewing him, and then it started to dawn on me. Oh wait, the content is like this neutral descriptor, right? Like, what is that? And then the part. Maybe you guys know.
It's
this
like Hunter
already.
Biden's content.
Yeah, exactly. Some content. The thing that got me was, and maybe you guys know this language. language already, but he was talking about getting together with other people, and he called them collabs, like collaborators. Uh-huh. And I thought, oh, that really cracked me up. I was like, man, we have totally whitewashed this. I mean, this is like, but it's language that's current, right? I mean, that's the thing. Like everything, when you move to that method of communication and method of presentation, content is a neutral descriptor, mm-hmm. and it could be absolutely anything. It could be a poem or it could be doing it, you know? This is content, I know. Big, giant slabs of content.
Well, when I worked at a newspaper, we always said, we're just doing stuff to fill in around the ads. You know? And they did. They'd lay out the ads. Out the ads first on the page, and then it's like, okay. You can get whatever we couldn't sell here.
So I should have figured out what was going on because the guy was dressed like a cowboy. Yeah. And I was like, why are they interviewing this cowboy about content? I was just like mystified. It's like, oh, like a little light went off in my head.
The chaps were the giveaway.
I just wanted to, yeah, exactly. Yeah. There were only chaps. I don't know. I don't understand how the algorithm works for YouTube, but I was getting dachshund videos for the longest time, and then I stopped getting dachshund videos, and then I started
the
getting
dog,
the dog, yeah, the little wiener dogs, yeah, badger hounds, and now I'm getting dachshund. Just started a few days ago getting dachshund videos again. I have no idea why, except now they're miniature dachshunds. I'm wondering what choice did I make? Was it the cowboy? I mean, what was? What were they thinking? It's just really mind blowing.
So he was not a big moneymaker.
Miniature wiener dog. I don't know.
Wow.
It baffles me. So I got to tell you guys, this was amazing. So Companion and I went down to the Lincoln Presidential Library. And it's a wonderful facility down in Springfield. I really encourage people to go. We went down to Chicago where we did some other things, including going to the Obama Presidential Center. But we took the train down to Springfield, and the train to Springfield is really nice. Springfield, not so much. It kind of reminds you of those movies from the 50s and 60s about the post-apocalyptic wasteland. You know, there's like not much there.
Is this the Springfield from The Simpsons?
Yeah, I think it is. Yeah. Actually, when the train pulls in, they have a big picture of Homer with the donuts. They're really playing on it, you know. But we went to the Presidential Center. It's really, really, really good. And it's not run by the U.S. government, by the way. They don't have any oversight. It's run by the state of Illinois. So actually, they're telling you the truth about stuff. But one thing that really hit me was we watched this presentation about the presidential library. And it was really very good. And the guy that was the speaker, he presented himself as a librarian. He was a hologram. And we didn't find out until the very end when he how do I know all this stuff about history? Because I was there at Antietam or whatever, and then he puts on his Civil War uniform, and then he disappears. And I had no idea. He looked like a real person, but he wasn't. He was a whatever, a ghost.
A hologram.
He was a hologram.
He told you he was a ghost.
Yeah, he told you he was a ghost. He's lied about what he was, but that's...
You thought he was an actor.
I did. Yeah. I did, yeah. I really did. It was really, really spooky. But anyway, so go down there. That was fun. That's what we did to feel in a mood, in a good mood about our nation. And they had a whole presentation, by the way, on the 14th Amendment. So I was really happy that was not destroyed. What I loved about the decision, though, is it proved to us that five people on the Supreme Court can read. So that was good, because it says it in the document. What it means, it wasn't that hard to do. Oh, boy, five of you can read. It's great to know.
You're talking about the Supreme Court upholding birthright citizenship. Yeah. Thank God.
Yeah.
That was the only thing I thought when it came out.
I just thought it was a minimal bar. Like, you can read the text. Yeah. It's not hard to figure out.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot that's ambiguous in the Constitution, but not that one.
No.
It says what it means.
Yeah. It's very straightforward.
Yeah.
The rest of them had a hard time reading, apparently. I don't know.
Or the checks didn't.
I don't know. I don't know what those nuns were teaching Clarence Thomas, but it wasn't how to read, apparently.
Clarence needs a new RV.
Yeah.
He's got to vote accordingly.
Yeah.
Anyway. So also there's a little controversy that, not little, but I mean that Mitch McConnell has been missing for 3 weeks. He's in the hospital.
Yeah.
But he's been in the hospital for 3 weeks, and some media outlet got a hold of the 911 call this week, and the 911 call, whoever was calling it in, said this guy is unconscious. We're doing CPR on him, mm-hmm. and that information hadn't gotten out yet.
Wow.
So they haven't. You know, there's speculation that he might be dead or on a ventilator or something. But there's an obscure law though that no member of Congress can be declared dead until they quit trading stocks for 3 straight days. So we'll see if that.
Yeah, we'll see. Actually, they're replacing him with one. You remember those little robots that would deliver food here in Madison?
Yeah,
they've been repurposed. So that's going to be.
They took those away.
Yeah, they did. They took them away, and now we know where they're going. That's going to be the new senator from Kentucky.
They can put a hologram of Mitch McConnell on one of those, on those little robots. So he can go around.
It'll be like Star Wars.
Uh-huh, it'll be perfect.
Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Yeah.
That's the forward thinking that we appreciate from you, Ruby.
So, well, that guy from New Jersey, the Keen, he disappeared for like 100 days.
I felt bad for. He said he was depressed.
Yeah, yeah, I know. And again, I've dealt with depression pretty much my whole life. I'm sympathetic to that.
Yeah.
That cause. But he disappeared for 4 months.
Yeah.
And they were really skeevy about saying what was going on.
And he kept picking up the check.
Oh, and he kept, but no, this is true. He kept trading stocks. Well, he was supposedly.
He wasn't that depressed.
Got to make money somehow.
Yeah.
A couple years ago, there was a lawmaker who was found in like a memory care facility. Do you guys remember that story?
No, because I was there too.
No.
Well, there was a reporter who had like gone and was like, why is there no one in your office? And then they tracked her down.
Oh, I don't remember that one.
Oh, dear. That's sad.
Well, I mean, McConnell's 84. This guy from New Jersey, he was in his 50s. But
not to be all ages, but 84. I don't know. I don't trust me to do anything.
I know.
Yeah, my grandpa's like 80, just turned 83, and he'll often, the past maybe 5 years, he'll be like, why are people my age doing it?
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, I want my Congress people to have smooth faces and boundless energy. I mean, that's what I really do. Like, I'll get to that tomorrow. I don't want that. I'm sorry. I don't mean to stigmatize. I mean, I'm getting up there myself, but I'm just like saying, you know, people differ, and they certainly do. But generally, as one ages, you lose your elasticity in various ways.
Yeah.
So, you know, it would be nice to have people new ideas and new ways of thinking about things.
Yeah. Not to be ageist, but you do lose some, lose energy, you lose some cognitive abilities, and really, you a lot of people, not everybody, but a lot of people lose the ability to absorb new information or to.
What'd you say?
I said that your pudding is on the way. Just relax.
Thank God. Where's my pudding?
Or just the idea of being able to discard old stuff. You know, it's like, oh, that's not working. Let's do something different, you know. So
I don't know why, but I just, with the pudding thing, I just remembered there was this emperor of Austria who was, because they, you know, it's primogeniture, so he was the next one in line. But he had lots of issues, lots of mental health issues. And what was his name? Ferdinand, I think. And the only recorded statement that they have of him while he was emperor, he had like a regent or something that was actually acting on his behalf. But the only recorded statement that he made was, apparently he wanted strudel. And they said, we don't have strudel. And he said, I'm the emperor, and I want strudel. That's what I want on my tombstone. I'm the emperor, and I want strudel.
Strudel and a Diet Coke.
Exactly. That was my mother. When my mother was in a care facility, it was so funny, because when she first went in, my mother could be so charming, so ultra charming. Until she wasn't. And when you first went in, she was charming them all. And she actually was patient of the month when she went in. And then a few days after she got patient of the month, I went in there with some family members, and the nurses were running around like maniacs. And they said, tell your mother her ice cream is coming any moment. Now you've seen the other side.
She was the queen of that facility.
Yeah, she was. Once she had the patient of the month thing in the bag, that was all over. You know.
You work for me now.
Yeah, exactly.
I own your soul. So, I don't know what made me think of this, but Thoreau's last words were, "Now comes good sailing, moose, Indian."
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Good.
So.
Yeah. I'll remember those.
I'm really on to the first part.
Yeah. The good sailing I could get.
You remember, you remember Oscar Wilde's last words?
No.
Either that wallpaper goes or I do.
Well, I would go just to not have to pull down the wallpaper.
So, speaking of dying.
Yes. Yeah.
No,
upbeat.
No, on the 4th of July.
Yeah.
Three, you know this, I'm sure.
Yes.
Three presidents have died on the 4th of July.
And, wow.
You know, famously, Jefferson and John Adams.
That's right.
On the same day.
Yeah. And they were both kind of like, did the other one die yet?
It was like,
that's kind of sweet.
Frenemies to the end, I guess. Yeah.
And it was the 50th anniversary.
Right.
I mean, it was very eerie.
Yeah. But then Monroe died on the 4th.
Yeah.
Also,
so. Yeah.
Wow.
He's a wannabe.
Is he?
A little bit. Yeah. He was one of our dumber presidents, actually.
Yeah. He died of severe doctrine, I think.
Severe doctrine.
Or doctoring.
Well, that wasn't his doctrine. I mean, Monroe was kind of like, he was kind of like the Reagan of his time. He had been everywhere and seen everything, but he really wasn't much of a much. But people liked him. He was nice and so on. The so-called Monroe Doctrine was actually written by John Adams' son, John Quincy Adams, who was the Secretary of State. And Monroe was like, yeah, it sounds good.
Yeah. Put my name on that.
He was the last president. This is one of the notable features about James Monroe. He was the last president to wear knee breeches with stockings, which were going out of style at that point.
Yeah.
But he hung on to that.
It's only because J. Edgar Hoover never got elected.
He had nice calves. And that is
Right. Well, you alluded to this earlier, but a portion of the stage built for President Trump's upcoming July 4th Freedom 25 celebration. I like how it's called President Trump Celebration.
Well, it is.
I mean, it is. Yeah. But
that's how you know which one's a scam.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. The one with all the money going to the Caymans. Portion of the stage collapsed during a rehearsal for a dance session.
Yeah.
Nearly striking a performer. Footage showed a group of dancers rehearsing their routine, then abruptly stopped after a piece of the overhead structure breaks off from the top and falls onto the stage below. They've had several things like that. They've got a replica of that arch they wanted, Arc de Trump or whatever.
Yeah, Arc de Trump,
That's kind of like apparently falling apart. There's stuff on it. There was another one of... I forget what it was now. It was like somebody said it was like oozing yellow stuff.
Yeah. I don't know. I watched the thing with the fallings... part of the stage.
Yeah.
And what was interesting about it was a whole bunch of women who were doing kind of like a kick line, and of course everything in this is kind of ridiculously nostalgic. It was something from the Second World War they were singing or something like this. But what was amusing to me was some of them immediately stopped. I mean, there were some real troopers that kept going. And I cracked me up. It's like, okay, a piece of the stage just fell. Do we keep on doing the routine?
The show must go on.
Yeah, exactly.
There's a great picture of a baseball game in the like 1930s, 1940s. I think it was in Cleveland. And, you know, the stadiums were all made out of wood back then.
Right, yeah.
And the upper deck is on fire. I mean, it's just like a huge fire in the upper deck. And then, but then in the bottom part of the photo, they're still playing the game.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
Like, hey, what the heck?
You gotta do it.
Wait till it gets down to the first deck and then we'll think about it. So
this stage issue is the exact same reason why I don't get on roller coasters that are put up by carnies for like 2 days. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like they come in at like, you know, 4 a.m. and take a slug of Jim Beam and get their wrench out and
sounds pretty normal to me.
Well, you're from Kentucky.
Yeah, right.
Oh yeah, that's right. Wait, I forgot my gun.
Yeah, I've always wondered that too. It's like, and then we're going to move this thing to Fond du Lac tomorrow.
Yeah, and I'm supposed to get on it and trust it to not collapse when I'm upside down 70 feet up in the air?
That's the fun part.
the collapsing?
I feel confident until I look over and see who's running the machine.
So the first time I was ever on one of those ones that flips you over was down at, is it Six Flags?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, Six Flags. And I went with a couple of friends of mine, and this one friend of mine... Aaron was his name, and he was such a joker. So the three of us all got on this ride together, and it goes upside down and flips around and does all kinds of crazy crap. And so we got off, and he would always put a lot of product in his hair. So me and my other friend, we make his hair stand up straight on end. And then as we were coming out, because the line to go in was right adjacent to the line to come out, so we're coming out, and he's shaking around. His hair is all staying straight on end. And man, the people in line to get on the thing were totally freaked out. It was one of the better practical jokes.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
I know we've been waiting for 30 minutes. Should we leave?
But look at that guy. Oh, my goodness. Oh, it's not all fun and games these days. I don't know. I felt especially bad, you know, having been born in Ohio, to read this thing about what's happening in Springfield with this, you know, Supreme Court decision on the Trump administration's, you know, terminating temporary protected status. There's 330,000 Haitians in the United States, and the and in Springfield in particular, there's it's a city of 60,000 in West Central Ohio. There's 10,000 Haitians in that town, famously known for eating the pets, right? As you remember from the debate, presidential debate back in the day,
which they don't do,
of course. But this is a huge, it's not just a tragedy for the people in the Haitians there who are being sent back to a very dangerous set of circumstances, but it's a danger to Springfield. Springfield has made progress. The Haitians leaving Springfield is going to be devastating. But the president, you know, there's something funny about those people he doesn't like. I can't imagine what it might be, but yeah.
I find this news so wild because it's like, what did you expect people to do when they've been here for however long they've been here on, you know, temporary protective statuses? It's like, right. Pause their life, like stay on ice, not change at all, and then you're just going to ship them back to where they came from? It's like, no, people have lives and they build community and they raise families. Yeah. And you can't just take that and send them back because the administration has changed.
Yeah. So lots of the Haitians had work permits thanks to their protected status, and they worked at most of the folks there who were, I mean, they were working hard. They were working for Dole. There's a Dole plant there. Honda makes cars there, and they have, of course, the Amazon. There's an Amazon warehouse there too. So they were filling a lot of jobs that people in the United States might not want to have, perhaps, and they're doing them quite well. And now their poor things are going back.
This is a comedy news show.
What's that?
This is a comedy news show that we're on.
Yeah. That's whatever. That, that's the reality of the Trump administration. You're trying not to think about it. Well, there's so many things that they do that are just goofy and wacky and risible, you know, like the stupid reflecting pool and stuff. But they're out for blood.
Doing tons of horrible things too. Speaking of Ohio, one of their U.S. senators, Bernie Marino, has said he's going to introduce legislation.
He's a piece of work, by the way.
I guessed it based on this story. He's going to introduce legislation that would eliminate birthright citizenship.
Okay.
After the Supreme Court just found out that.
Also someone who can't read.
Yeah. the Supreme Court was responding to an executive order.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so he's gone to have a law so they can relitigate it.
Keep it going forever.
Yeah.
And also, you know, the president's ample butt needs to be kissed every now and then.
Yeah,
so this is another one.
That's a big part of
it. Bernie, my great buddy Bernie.
Yeah. Well, and it's also to the mouth breathers who, you know, think that it's
what about the knuckle draggers? You're leaving them out.
We'll get to them later. We'll do something about welfare, or food stamps, or something. But
the right wing redneck strokers.
Hey, in the UK, they found a rare copy of a copy of the U.S. Declaration of Independence. They found there's like maybe 11 copies left. Yeah. They found one in their archives.
George III left it in his inbox forever.
I'll get to that tomorrow.
I'll get to that. I got bigger fish to fry.
It's 4th of July weekend. Yeah,
exactly.
I'll deal with that after the holidays.
You know how it is. The mail just builds up. I mean, come on.
It's like all ads, major credit cards, applications, Declaration of Independence.
Need your crown polish?
Your castle warranty? Yeah, right.
I've been getting so many credit card ads or mailers recently that I'm like, this is a sign that we're like on the verge of a recession, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I get like 3 or 4 a day.
Yeah. Sometimes I get like same company, slightly different names of mine, you know?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Well, you weren't with us back in the olden days, back in the 90s, when I had a dog named Maggie. And Maggie actually got a credit card.
Wow.
Not an application, not a pre-approved offer.
Full credit card.
They sent Maggie a credit card. The dog had a better credit rating than I did. That was really disturbing.
What did she buy?
Dog stuff.
Dog stuff. Yeah.
Chew toys.
Bones.
Bones. Oh. In Rochester, New York, this is a perplexing story to me. A Massachusetts man is accused of running from police on an electric unicycle. They said they got a call Sunday about someone weaving in and out of traffic on a unicycle. They found him, but then he didn't stop, so I had to chase him down. They finally arrested him. But here's the part that perplexes me. The police say the unicycle he was riding can reach speeds up to 90 miles an hour.
What?
And I thought, well, that can't be true. So I Googled it, and it said, yeah, they make unicycles that supposedly can go 90 miles an hour now. So
wow.
Now, it's probably like one of those things that looks like a skateboard with a wheel in the middle.
Yeah.
But still, I wouldn't want to be going 90, and I wouldn't want to go 9 on that. I mean,
so. Yeah.
You can wear your helmet, and you're still...
The helmet will survive.
Yeah. Dang.
Remember that one time we were at a festival and a mindless minion came up to talk to us on
yes.
a unicycle?
Yes.
And he was a very nice guy.
He was nice.
I forget his name, but he came up and he was probably, I don't know how old he was. I can't tell age, but he was a grown adult. I mean, he was
a grown-ass adult.
It wasn't a young one.
Yeah.
And he
had a little white in his beard.
Yeah. He had just learned how to ride
Yeah. He was good at it.
Yeah, he had just learned how to ride the unicycle like a couple of weeks before that. And I said, well, how's that going for you? And he said, oh, I fall a lot. And it's like, well, yes, you do. You're 40 years old and riding a unicycle. But then we saw him the next year, and he was even better. So good for him if he's listening. So.
We need more unicyclists, and I think not electric unicycles. I want old school pedal-only unicycles.
Like clown unicycles.
Yeah, I think like this is a Madison cultural thing, and I think we should have more of it.
Yeah, there's quite a few around, but we could pump that up.
We got to make sure that we're staggering it with ages, you know what I mean?
Well, you got to have young, supple bones.
Yeah. Bendable bones.
We'll put that on the Mel and Floyd agenda. We haven't pushed the Mel and Floyd agenda for a while. Did we get a...
We got something about the Haitians. I just want to mention, by the way, because I didn't give you much hope in there. I just want to let you know that just like our friends in Minneapolis, the people in Springfield, by the way, the neighbors and friends of the Haitians who've been targeted by this fascist regime, that they are actually stepping up and talking about taking care of children and hiding some of their relatives and basically creating shelter for immigrants who remain. And a caller did call and said, we need to support the people of Ohio and the Haitians, and encourages us to encourage you, the listeners, to call the governor of Ohio and to offer support.
Oh, very nice. You know, that has been one of the encouraging things we've seen, again, with the people in Minneapolis and other places when they've overstepped the line with
they're in Madison right now, but they're being very sneaky. Mark Wayne Mullen has taken a very different approach. They've been in Milwaukee, they've been in Madison, and they're just kind of a little slyer about it than they used to, but they're here right now.
And
if you look at the State Journal, there's stories of people being
they raided some laundromat
on the south side.
The Wisconsin State Journal Wisconsin Eye has... No, that's not who I'm talking about. I'm talking about Wisconsin Watch has been doing some really good reporting, on ICE in Wisconsin. So, scary. Yeah.
But you're right. I mean, initially it was more intimidation. They just wanted to use some shock and awe.
Yeah.
And now they're like,
the beady-eyed fanaticism's not going away.
No, exactly.
They're going to be less flamboyant about it.
Just different tactics.
Yeah. Speaking of beady-eyed fanaticism, I just want to say that old ACB... Amy Coney Barrett has been getting a lot of unpleasant comments in reaction to her decision. She, of course, was on the 5-4 side in the recent decision, first on the birthright citizenship, but also on the question of mail-in ballots. Mm-hmm. And Justice Barrett sided with the Chief Justice and the court's, quote, liberal minority to reject a push to restrict mail-in ballots.
And this is not done well with the right wing. The right wing are very unhappy with her. And according to Matt Walsh, who's a right-wing commentator, he says, turns out Amy Coney Barrett is a DEI hire, little better than Ketanji Jackson.
Wow.
And that's, considering who's saying that, that's quite an insult. Let's see. She's a terrible pick. When's the last time we had a Republican president who didn't put a liberal justice on the court? Nancy Mace of South Carolina, another one, asked for Barrett to be removed from the bench.
Wow.
So she's getting a lot of flack right now, again, for just knowing how to read. Let's see, this one senator from Missouri by the name of Eric Schmidt, Herr Schmidt, we call him, a shockingly wrong opinion, he said. Remember Election Day, this disastrous SCOTUS decision authored by Barrett guarantees we'll keep drifting away from it. Blah, blah, blah. Megyn Kelly and all the other people are mouthing off.
It's a nonpartisan body, you know, I mean, nonpartisan, but this is an example of nonpartisanship. So I don't know.
Hey, well, it shows you the lie, right? I mean, it's like, well, we're just correcting the, you know, the wrongs of the liberal activist judges. And it's like, no, they just want it the way they want it.
Right.
They want their,
give the baby a bottle.
And they can't even conceive that somebody might not agree with them 100% of the time. And if they don't, then they're.
Yep.
They should be impeached or
at the best impeached. I mean, they're, I'm sure she's getting tons of death threats.
Yeah. So,
because that's the way they work it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Trump said that in 2016 when he was when he looked like he was going to lose to Hillary. He was talking about how she's going to put all these liberal judges on the Supreme Court and there's nothing you can do, you know, except for a Second Amendment solution.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, it was like a presidential candidate, you know, pretty much telling people, you know, go get your guns if you know. If your candidate doesn't win, and he got elected twice.
So. Yeah. Well, he sort of got elected the first time.
Well, three times, actually, if you count 2020.
Yeah, right. I know.
Do you think he's so mad that he's only ever be a woman candidate?
Probably.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, that's he does fixate on Obama and Biden a lot, I think he would have much rather have run against, beaten Biden.
Yeah, you know? The second time rematch.
Especially when it was shown in that debate, you know, that how far Biden had slipped, you know, that would have, I don't know. But he's
it's not about him. He's, you know, he's crazy, but he's temporary. It's the, I worry about the, you know, the Stephen Millers. Those guys are not going anywhere.
No.
Anywhere.
Trump
and
is
Trump. The J.D. Vances.
Yeah,
and,
yeah. Trump is the corpse plant that grew out of a big pile of manure, and when that wilts, when that wilts,
the pile
of manure will still be there, and another corpse plant will take its place.
Yeah. It all started with Reagan.
Yeah,
that's the way you do it. You got the front man. You got to have the front man out there.
Yeah. So, well, Reagan was like the smooth, you know, like the insurance salesman who.
Yeah.
You know, makes you think he's your friend and everything. And
I remember somebody,
Trump is like the carnival barker. You know,
The thing with Reagan is, I remember reading many years ago, they said that the reason why he seemed nice is because he was usually surrounded by all these Republicans, and their biggest goal in life is to foreclose on your mortgage. So of course he seemed genial compared to that. You know?
Hey, you're listening to the Mel and Floyd Show here on WORT 89.9 on the FM. You might be listening on the internet at WRTFM.org or in the future because of our wonderful archives page. And you could be listening via pod thanks to our pal Mindless Minion D-Cubed who does all the file management. So you can listen through Spotify or Apple Pods or wherever. So. All right, we're sitting here with Smarty Pants and Ruby. We're going to take a brief break.
Ruby!
And we're going to take a brief break, play some announcements, and come back with... You got anything good?
The founding father who tried to secretly negotiate a truce between the U.S. and Great Britain.
We're on the 250th year of our ceasefire now.
Exactly.
Support for this program is provided by WORT's listener sponsors, the National Electrical Contractors Association, Madison Division, and the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 159, proudly serving electrical contractors and electricians in the Greater Madison area since 1900. More info at IBEW159.org.
WORT thanks its listener sponsors and the Wine and Hop Shop, located at 1919 Monroe Street, specializing in home brewing and winemaking supplies for over 40 years. Open to in-person shopping or order online for curbside pickup, in-Madison delivery and shipping of supplies at wineandhop.com.
WORT thanks its listener sponsors and Bernie's Rock Shop, located at 901 East Johnson, and our new shop, Bernie's on Park, at 636 South Park in Madison. We offer handmade silver jewelry as well as unique mineral, crystal, and fossil specimens from around the world. Store hours and more information available at berniesrockshop.com.
And we're back. You'll like this story. A bunch of big companies, Ford, IBM, Commonwealth Bank, are rehiring workers they replaced with AI after automation fails to deliver. So they're finding out that the AI wasn't trained adequately, so they're hiring these people back to do more training with the AI so they can be replaced again.
Yeah. It's all hype. It's all hype.
I read a story today that the Jersey Mike's sandwich shop is going to issue an IPO. And so they had their prospectus, and this reporter or blogger, whoever it was, read through it, and they counted, and there's like, it had mentioned AI in their prospectus 22 different times for the sandwich shop.
In what respect? Right?
It just kind of threw it in there. AI.
Okay. So you've probably never heard of John Dickinson.
No.
He was a leader in Pennsylvania politics. He was a Quaker, and he was a leader in the First Continental Congress in 74. And he was the author of actually the document many people forget was our first Constitution, the Articles of Confederation. He wrote the first draft of that. He was he was a leading figure, and he and John Adams got into it pretty big time because John Adams was all about independence. And Dickinson was more like, hey, you know, let's see if we can solve this without fighting, because after all, he was a Quaker. So it turns out that he sent a series of letters to some important figures in Great Britain during this time, asking if they could possibly mediate between, these sort of movers and shakers in the British economy and the government. And the person he wrote to in particular was a guy by the name of Barclay, which may sound familiar to you because there's a bank now, Barclays Bank, of course, which is one of the big banks in the United Kingdom. And he was trying to see if there could be some way, basically, he had made some proposals and counterproposals and so on. And Barclay was working to basically try to get the British government to pay attention to some of these things. It included proposals for two drafts of a parliamentary bill, which was very unusual, but Barclay was thinking about introducing those into the British Parliament. The problem, of course, was that people at this point, things move very quickly, and communications did not. So by the time these proposals got to Britain...
Like the Battle of New Orleans.
Yeah, by the times the proposals got there, basically things had moved on. And the king actually never even read any of the petitions or stuff that Barclay was being sent. And so they went ahead and sent, of course, at that point, the largest naval armada in the history of the world to teach the colonists what's what. He doesn't get remembered very well for this, and nobody knew that he was engaging in this until fairly recently. It turns out that Barclays are a very rich family, and somebody inherited all this stuff, and they thought, this is the first time, it's like great-great-great-great-great-great-grandson or something, said, I think I'll look in that box and see what's in there, and found all these letters from John Dickinson. So they were trying. People at the last minute were still trying.
And swimsuit photos.
That was the surprising part. But yeah, it was basically they weren't just like saying, oh, let's start shooting each other. They really were trying to, people were still trying to mediate in the last minute.
Sure.
Yeah.
You know, I think, and I include myself in this, I think Americans don't really know a lot about the Revolutionary War and that era. I mean, they kind of know the grade school, you know, mm-hmm. version of it, but they don't really know, you know, a lot of it. It gets glossed over, I think.
And we don't really emphasize the extent to which it was a civil war as well.
Yeah.
There were probably only about a third of the people in the North American colonies
that's
who were even
thinking.
In favor of it.
Yeah, that's what
and
I'm thinking.
A bunch of the people that were on the losing end moved to Canada and started basically populating Canada. And one of the things that Alexander Hamilton, for example, they didn't happen to mention this in the musical, he made a lot of money. People would flee their homes, their properties, and he would resell that to people. So the loyalists would be like, I got to leave because, you know, they're going to burn down my house or something because I'm still loyal to the crown. And so they'd move to Canada, and it's like, hey, look at all this vacant property.
Where'd that come from?
Where'd that come from? Yeah, so there was a lot of mischief going on there that
well,
we needed.
A lot of them moved to Canada so they could put milk in bags. Which
there's that. That was a big...
That was in the original declaration. Did you bring a copy of the Declaration?
I did.
Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, I do want to talk about it because I brought my Documents of American History 10th edition, which of course has to be on Mr. Marty's pants shelf. Mm-hmm. And so I have other documents in here too, but I got the Declaration. And I thought I'd just mention some of the things that they accused the king of. You know, many years later, Jefferson was asked about the Declaration of Independence, and he said, you know, all that stuff at the I'm paraphrasing mildly. He said, all that stuff at the beginning, that was just what people thought at the time, you know, all people are created equal, et cetera. He said the real part that he was focusing on was the indictment, like all the things the king had done to prove that he was actually not worthy of being a king, but in fact was a tyrant. And what I go through these things, he said, but when a long train of abuses, this is from the Declaration of Independence, and usurpations pursuing invariably the same object evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, meaning the states, it is their duty to throw off such government and provide new guards for future security. So he goes through the history of the present king of Great Britain is a history of repeated injuries and usurpations, all having in direct object the establishment of an absolute tyranny. And he has refused his assent to laws the most wholesome and necessary for the public good. Well, of course, Trump just got done saying he wasn't going to sign the Housing Act that Congress passed with gigantic bipartisan majorities until they did his crazy screw with the election law. He has endeavored to prevent the population of these states for that purpose, obstructing the laws of naturalization of foreigners. He has obstructed the administration of justice. He has made judges dependent on his will alone. He has erected a multitude of new offices and sent hither swarms of officers to harass our people. He has kept among us in times of peace standing armies. He has affected to render the military independent of and superior to the civil power. Think of all these things. He's cut off trade with all parts of the world. He's imposed taxes on us without our consent. He's depriving us in many cases of the benefits of trial by jury and transporting us beyond the seas to be tried for pretended offenses. Wow. The one that it really stood out for me was he has excited domestic insurrections among us.
Damn.
So it's just like you put all these things together, a little plus sign between these and some of the other things. And it's like he says, a prince whose character is thus marked by every act which may define a tyrant is unfit to be the ruler of a free people. So that no king's metaphor is a really good one.
Yeah.
Really hits it on the head.
What's that metaphor about, or that saying about study history or you're doomed to repeat it?
Yes.
Feels like you were just saying we don't know enough about that time in history, and here we are.
Yeah.
I had to repeat history, but it was just because I wasn't paying attention.
You were doomed to repeat it.
No, I liked history.
I did too.
I had a really cool teacher, Mr. Berg, who was like a great storyteller. So he would, instead of just saying, you know, this happened in 1776, this happened in 79, and then he would tell the stories about it, and he would like make these characters come to life. It was really cool.
I think if you want to, you know, there's different ways of getting a multicultural experience, but knowing what people thought in the past, that is a real multicultural experience. Like, they thought what about what? You really get a sense of the like wide range of possibility of human expression and understanding. Mm-hmm. So,
one of the big stories this week is that the president has made something like, was it $2 billion since he's been in office? And just, I mean, just the second term. I mean, just the for the year and a half.
That's so. Just pop bottles he's turned in.
And the reality is a lot of that isn't, you know, business acumen or it's not like it's you know, he put money in the right stock and it went up or something.
Yeah.
It's like these goofy little.
It's crypto.
It's crypto stuff where, you know, I mean, it's shady money. It's
he totally fleeced his followers because everybody was investing in this crypto coin.
Yeah.
And then
like 10 people made money on it.
Yeah, exactly. That's what you do.
But he also made 21,000 trades in 2025.
Wow.
21,000. I mean, what does that work out to a day? It's like 30 a day or something.
I hardly know how to make a trade. Like a single trade.
Well, you're obviously not qualified in politics.
I did get a little moment of schadenfreude, though, because he still has to pay E. Jean Carroll the $5 million.
Yeah, but again, he's trying to weasel out of it. They're asking for more. Yeah, it's the old, you know, I'll just keep delaying this until the end of the, you know, the heat death of the universe or something. We might have talked about this before. I looked up, you know, it's the 250th anniversary of the signing, as you mentioned, the declaration. Yeah. And I looked up the meaning of the number 250, because a lot of places, you know, numbers have significance
in
different things. And in numerology, mythology, religion, stuff
like
that. Sure. So in Chinese, the slang, it means idiot or moron.
You're a real 250. I see it.
We have our own term for that. it's a way to call somebody a fool. let's see. In the Bible, the number 250 is primarily associated with divine judgment, leadership, and the consequences of rebelling against God's established order.
That checks.
It's a strong cautionary tale about pride and authority.
Yep.
Antichrist.
The rebellion of the 250 leaders. They were rebelling against Moses and Aaron. So there were 250 renowned leaders of the Israelite congregation, like Edward G. Robinson and those guys.
So. Yeah. Worship the golden calf.
What else we got here for 250? Let's see.
For the listener, Mel's looking at like this giant, like, full, like you're looking at a huge block of text. It's all about 250.
Yeah, it's something. It's
he
something
just unrolled his scroll over there.
I should have put some breaks in here.
A bullet point would be nice.
I'm kind of getting like dizzy trying to pull stuff out of here, but.
I feel like 250 is such a kind of random number. Like it is.
Yeah.
It's significant. It's a quarter of a thousand. It's.
Yeah.
A 50. I don't know.
It ends in a zero.
So,
well, Pants and I were both around for the bicentennial.
Yes, we were.
Which was a much bigger deal. Mm. So it was more universal. I mean, you know, we were less, you know, divided than we are now. And so everybody could kind of agree, well, let's have a big party. And it was a big party. And it was a lot of fun.
Well, President Ford was the president at that point. And he gave, I mean, you can watch his speech online. He gave a pretty nice speech. He was just kind of like, you know, we're all in this together and blah, blah, blah. I mean, things weren't just quite as insane as they are now. Not that they were great, but they just weren't quite as insane. And I remember vividly, I was on the Esplanade in Boston. There were people that were like three stories high. There would be like a person with their kid on their shoulder and then a baby on top of that. So they could see Arthur Fiedler and the Boston Pops. And the thing that was so funny about that, they were playing all these patriotic songs, but they got to the end and they played, of all things, and I still think this is hysterically funny, they played the 1812 Overture. And I think the reason why is because they were firing, they had all these like wooden ships in the harbor and so on. And so they fired guns. They fired off cannons along the Esplanade, along the Charles River, and they, all the church bells in Boston started ringing because that's part also of the 1812 overture. It was quite an experience. Cool. Yeah, it was really, really nice. But now we've got, as you know, all-star wrestling or whatever. So obviously we've evolved. I have to say that, going back to that too, Mel, this week I couldn't leave this story behind. J.D. Vance was talking about Watergate this week. Did you notice that?
Yeah.
And he was making the claim that, you know, that he was trying to downgrade what Nixon did. And I'm just kind of like, no, upgrade what Nixon did. You know, I mean, he was trying to do bad things. But what he was saying was it would just be a part of the news cycle today. And I think he was right about that, unfortunately.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
Because we just and of course, what happened back then, which could never happen now, is the Republicans had shame. They went to the White House and said, you're never going to survive this. Who would say that to the Mad King? Nobody. I mean, that's the difference from where we are. Yeah.
Well, this idea of shame, just that doesn't enter in the equation anymore. I know you were in the Capitol during the Scott Walker, Act 10
stuff. Sure, of course, yeah.
And the people were, when they were signing it, and the protesters were chanting shame.
Yeah.
But it's like yelling, you know, calculus at a dog or something. No, that differential's wrong, Watson.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Yelling calculus at a dog. Yeah, exactly.
People on the left are not having as many kids as conservatives.
Yeah.
Surprise, surprise.
Yeah, I think we all kind
of. It's because they believe in climate change.
It was a study, and we've seen this information before, but this is just another one. Scientific Reports is the name of the magazine. It publishes that it said political beliefs are increasingly linked to the number of children Americans choose to have. Conservative individuals, probably white conservatives, tend to maintain birth rates near historical averages. Left-leaning individuals are having significantly fewer children.
It's all these women going to college.
Yeah. No, it's true. I mean, you can see that phenomenon throughout the Global South. I mean, as soon as women are educated and given rights, they say no. You know, I don't care to have 18 children.
Right. So. Yeah. Or I'm going to start when I'm 32 and suddenly can't have 10 kids. Because biologically, that doesn't work.
Yeah, right. That's a good point.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's... You can almost kind of rely on that, which shows you how the United States is a very bifurcated society. I mean, that's just the case all the way down the line, all this different stuff. So
there's been a study in the national parks over which animals are most likely to attack you. They looked at nearly 3,000 wildlife incidents. Oh, this is in Canada, Canadian national parks.
Okay,
and it's kind of a surprising animal that was involved in about half of those attacks.
Ferrets. They're small, but they're very, very intense.
They were Shih Tzus, actually. I don't know. No, they were elk.
Oh, elk. Oh, they get testy.
Elk, yeah. And the Masons, too.
Floyd was an elk.
I wasn't there.
Oh, you weren't an elk.
No.
Okay.
Floyd was in, because they have an Elks Club down off of, kind of behind.
You got to watch out when you're in there.
That's where most of the attacks took place.
I have a attacking animal story too this week.
Oh, good. Oh.
Out of New Zealand and Australia, apparently there is a 2,000-pound elephant seal who is like wreaking havoc on different like traffic cones, and it'll just like come up and like destroy things whenever he sees.
No, that's
them.
That's a Scottish soccer.
Well, okay, but in Australia, everything is either poisonous or super violent.
Yeah, that's
so
perfect.
I mean, it's hard to live there. Companion was telling me once he was down there at a conference or something, and there was this duck that was so testy about everything. And he said it literally would grab you by the pants leg and just bite, you know. And so this one friend of his lifted his leg up, and the duck is just hanging there. You know? Like, they're all really keyed up, those animals in Australia.
Yeah. Well, those ducks, they're all descendants of convict ducks.
Oh, convict ducks. Yeah, exactly.
It's the genetic thing.
They're calling this seal Neil the Seal, and Australian officials are telling people to respect his privacy and leave him alone, because apparently people are really...
How big is it?
2,000 pounds?
Yeah, I would respect that.
The fact that he had to be told that is the sad part.
They're Australians. New Zealanders.
Hi.
Good day.
Good day, mate.
Well, we have friends who do seal rescue in Hawaii, I've mentioned before. Yeah. And it is amazing how many people want to screw with the seals. Yeah. And so what they do is there's this one kind of seal that it has to sleep. In order to sleep fully, like unlike some marine mammals where they can kind of switch off part of their brain, it literally has to go ashore to get a good night's sleep. And so people come and screw with it. So what the volunteers do is if there's a seal sighting, they race to that area and they put little pegs and little ropes around it to keep people away. And you would be amazed how many humans cannot understand this concept. And so one time I went with my friend to some of these. One time there was a guy who walked over it and walked over to take a picture of the seal. And my friend Charlie said, "Did you not see it was roped off?" I said, "Oh, no, I didn't see that." So he managed to somehow walk over it and not fall.
You could take the 9 justices of the Supreme Court and 6 of them would climb over that.
Exactly. Well, then there was another time, there was this woman and she was over there talking to the seal. Uh-huh. And so Charlie said, "Really, you shouldn't bother the seal." And she said, "That's okay. The seal told me it's all right." And his response was, "The seal told me you're full of crap." And at one point I said to him, "Charlie, this is about helping the seals, not about hating on the humans." And he said, "Oh, I can do both at once."
Really?
She thought she had the seal of approval.
Ah. Oh, boo.
Sorry. A card shop in Oregon, the state, not my little town. A card shop has halted its Yu-Gi-Oh! Tournaments for a week after receiving multiple complaints and bad reviews due to smelly players.
Ooh.
It's an independently owned game store in Beaverton. It's going viral for taking a hard stance against poor hygiene. In a statement on its Discord channel, the shop confirmed that it's suspending its Yu-Gi-Oh! Tournaments for a week, placing the game on stinky contestants.
Mm.
We've had issues with people mistreating the restrooms and multiple bad reviews because of poor hygiene.
I think you mean differently odored.
As a reminder, we encourage players to follow Konami guidelines and report anyone who does not. And Konami's famously implemented official tournament rules specifying player hygiene back in 2019, saying that all persons attending a tournament, not just players, must be clean and wear clean clothing or risk being penalized.
Wow.
These are indoor kids. Like, what are they kind of got an odor to them, you know what I mean?
They grew up in the basement, like a mushroom.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Hey, I just want to mention that the UW-Madison Cinematheque has canceled its summer film screenings, which is very sad. You may have heard of this. There was an air conditioning problem over at the U after a chilled water line broke more than a week ago. So it's sad. They have a lot of great free classic films and new international films, and that's a wonderful way to spend some time seeing films on the big screen. But unfortunately, they had to cancel their program for it this summer. So
they were just doing a Bleak Week set of films that were all like really depressing films at the end of June. But I'm sad to see them close for the summer.
Yeah. They found the missing giraffe in Texas. Somehow Texas misplaced the giraffe.
It's a big place.
It was hiding under the coffee table. They never thought to look there. let's see. A Texas representative wants to repeal the 17th Amendment, which is the one that allows for direct election of U.S. senators.
Sure.
Okay.
And just let state legislators do it.
Yeah.
So.
We trust them.
That sounds so bad.
Well, see, the reason why they have to go after that one is because they can't gerrymander a state.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I mean, that's why you're, you know, they can't basically jigger with it, so they got to do something else.
Yep. El Serpentine's here. Hi.
Howdy.
How you doing?
Good.
What are you doing today? Anything special? Anything fun? And patriotic?
I'm being more subversive than usual.
More subversive than usual, they say. Right. So look forward to that. So
that's as patriotic as I can.
Got time for a couple more short ones here. Intelligence is linked to pro-social behaviors. A massive new study indicates that people with higher cognitive abilities are more likely to engage in behaviors that benefit society. The research links higher intelligence scores to higher rates of voting, charitable giving, and purchasing environmentally friendly vehicles.
Oh, you just say that because you're smart.
I see. I'm like, I do those things, therefore I am, you know?
Yeah.
So reverse engineering. Way around.
Yeah, I agree. No, I think that's right. I mean, we became smart by having to second guess what other people were up to.
Yeah.
That's actually... You're looking at me funny. What is going on there? Got a lot of theory has to go into that.
I'm reading the room.
Very good. Reading the room. That's how reading started.
Read the belt.
The belt, yeah.
So, well, sadly, we're almost out of time here. So it's time to declare
the
weekend.
The holiday weekend.
That was so good. You had a real... oomph to that one.
Yeah.
I was looking at Mel. I thought I like blew his ears out there at first. Sorry about that.
It's okay. Well, Ruby, it was great to see you. It's yeah. really nice that you came in.
I'm glad to have one day off a year.
Welcome to the private sector. Pants, great to see you.
You too, buddy.
All right, stick around. It is 2 o'clock. You're listening to WRT 89.9 FM. Stick around. The kiosk is next. And after that, El Serpentine being... more subversive than usual.
This is the Insurgent Radio Kiosk for Friday, July 3rd.
This is Bird Note. At this time of year, a very young male Buick's wren is beginning to learn how to sing. Like a human baby, he'll babble while he experiments with sounds and learns how to organize phrases. The young Buick's wren is listening to the song of his father, who sings a crisp, well-defined song, separated by pauses. Now, let's compare. Here's the song of our young Buick's wren. It's fuzzy, unfocused, a little rambling. Here's the adult male again. It's fully developed and...